One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Craftsman days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Every phone call, every text message, every mouse click, our virtual footprints have to route through somewhere on their way to their destinations, and the prying eyes of the U.S. government are there every step of the way. Copies of your private digital details just may be stored on Uncle Sam's cloud inside an unassuming building in the desert. This week's episode is America's Dark Web, the NSA's Utah Data Center.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you. Well, shout out to our patrons at the Getting Into It tier for voting on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. And also, damn it.
I was secretly pulling for this one. So, thank you. Just because no one is safe.
Yeah, there's nothing private. Like, anything digital is not private, which we say all the time. And if you're a patron, thank you to our patrons also who support us and let us do our mini-sode that we did a couple months ago on digital evidence and like how local law enforcement can subpoena to get digital evidence. But what we're talking about today is like the G-man in the suit with the glasses that you don't even actually, he's not even in a suit. He's probably like, you dress like a janitor or dress like just a guy at the front desk, like undercover NSA people in our literal phone companies like AT&T, and they're getting copies of our shit.
It's truly wild when like you think like, yeah, everything that I do online is tracked, but for real, idiot. Like we're not, it's not just a thing people say, you know, it's like literally every single move you make, like Sting said, it can be tracked if it needs to be. If the NSA right now was like, I want to see everything Christy's done in the past 30 years, it's like, here you go. Cue me evaporating into thin air, because to have all of that presented to me, I would just wither away. Every text, email, internet search, to think that is all somewhere. And I imagine this Utah Center is just rows and rows of servers, and everybody has their own in my head. And in mine, I've got my own, and it's sitting right there. And it's like your whole digital footprint is right here for anyone to take.
Getting updated and added in real time
as well. Like things I did today, or you know what I mean? Like
real time.
It's really wild. And it's always crazy to me when people are like, well, I don't want to do that because the government has my information. I'm like, bitch, the government has had your information since day one. Do you have a social security number? Did you get a driver's license? Have you ever applied for any kind of credit card? Like anything. And even if you do really nothing, you're still like – trackable. So
yeah, well, it's
hard to be totally off the grid.
What do you mean do nothing, right? You're like, well, I go to the grocery store and pay cash. Okay, right. Well, they have facial recognition software on and they track who you are, how much you spend. Like they might
CCTV
not say
CCTV footage of you in the grocery store.
You know, you punch in your phone number to get your little discount code. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, oh, I get my 20% off of my carrots. And you're like, yes. And also now we know every time you come what all you buy and what how better we can sell it to you. So we'll get I have some hot takes. And so what do we think about this, the overlap between data and the government and also corporations having our data? But I'll save my soapbox for the end until you all have it's stretch your arms wide to get your arms around just how big the surveillance state in the United States is. We could probably do like a 10 episode series mm-hmm. on this. So we are really condensing this kind of into it. Like Edward Snowden has a paragraph. We could probably do 5 episodes just on Edward Snowden.
There's been like, yeah, a whole series of podcasts done just about him.
Yeah.
It's honestly like I got bogged down reading everything because one, I was like, well, I didn't realize that this is like the fifth iteration of the NSA. Mm-hmm. And really, they've been gathering our information since the early 1900s. And there's been whistleblowers since then mm-hmm. because there's always somebody that's like, guys, we shouldn't be doing this. Mm-hmm. And then they try to say something. And then they are exiled to Russia.
I was going to say, then it's that meme from Parks and Rec, right to jail, right away. Mm-hmm. Right to jail.
Yeah. No.
Tell people too much.
It truly is wild.
Right to jail. Not enough. Also, right to jail. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is shocking that, and a lot of this stuff, I think we see it sort of filtered through mainstream media sources. And if you're not like a big data nerd that like wants to dig in and understand it, myself included, like I don't super understand a ton of this until this mm-hmm. week with all of our research and looking into it. And I will say James Bamford, who wrote the book Body of Secrets, he's written a couple of pieces on the NSA and he wrote the Wired article that we'll reference. He is an excellent nonfiction writer who takes something that is so as complex as the complete development of human computing and made it understandable and in fact kind of fun to listen to. So if this is not enough for you, I highly recommend any of his work because he in addition to talking to people that work there, has gone through a ton of now declassified documents, but then also just writing in that style that you're like, oh, that makes sense. And now mm-hmm. I'm even more scared.
Right? It truly is the advent of technology, like how much autonomy and privacy we all lost. We all gained a ton of great advances as well, but it does make you stop and ask yourself at what cost.
Right, for sure. That's our question today because we want to be safe, right? And that's the underlying reason for all of this is safety. So we all is see it? What yeah, that's the reason we've been given, right?
Is it?
Right?
I'll save my opinions for so what do we think, too.
Y'all better ready. Our soapboxes are ready for the end. Y'all better get ready.
Well, we're also ready to go back out on tour in just a couple of weeks.
So soon. Yes, you are talking about our full moon energy tour where you hear all about the darker side of the moon, what it does to us, what lurks up there, and what people really think happened during the Apollo missions. From the people themselves. If you want to know about government secrets, baby, come on out because we got them for you. In addition Truly. To all of the mysterious and macabre stuff you love about the show.
It's all about the moon. We got cryptids, true crimes, conspiracy theories, all sorts of witchy stuff. So come on out. San Diego, September 17th. Phoenix, September 18th. Las Vegas, September 19th, and then we'll be finishing it out in Dallas on October 17th. So for all the details, including dates, times, venues, and more, visit sinisterhood.com/live shows. Well, for now, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. The legacy agency that would eventually become the National Security Agency, or NSA, was started in 1917 during World War I. It was called the Cipher Bureau of Military Intelligence, and its purpose was to decode enemy communications. After the First World War ended, the Cipher Bureau changed its focus to continue spying on foreign countries to give the U.S. a leg up in international negotiations. In 1929, Secretary of State Henry Stimson spearheaded the closure of the Cipher Bureau, famously saying,
"Gentlemen do not read each other's mail."
However, during the rise of Adolf Hitler and the access of evil in the years leading up to World War II, the U.S. created the Signal Intelligence Service. The SIS worked on breaking codes until 1952, when the National Security Agency was born.
And I found out that the codes were sort of made by this machine. I think it was a Swedish machine, if I'm not mistaken, that it would, you know, encode things, and then someone with the right decoder could decode things. Well, the NSA, the early signal intelligence service, got one of those machines and was like reverse engineering it in order to intercept enemy things. And so they went from like reverse engineering to being like, we just need to make this shit ourselves.
You know, I mean, cut out the middleman.
Right.
Just get one for yourself. The agency's goal was to break codes, usually complex mathematical equations that took the manpower of hundreds of human agents. With the rise of electronic computing starting in 1957, the NSA became fixated on how to harness and use the newly invented technology to help sift through enemy secrets.
And it was huge to have electronic computers, much like with NASA, because like what would take one, like a problem might take 200,000 agents to work on. Like you can't spend that many humans to do that. So then when you start to go, okay, well, this one computer replaces 200,000 agents, and then the next iteration of that computer 2 years later replaces 3 million agents, they're still going to have agents working for them, but they're just going to be doing, you know, they're going to run one computer, and therefore your manpower just like not quadruples, it like million tuples. That's what happens.
No, 8 million tuples, yeah. Million tuples.
Yeah.
But just think about that. A computer is able to do like 300,000 times faster a computer problem than a human.
Yeah. And it's crazy to me that this is all just math, essentially. Like they were saying, like encryption is just keys, which are long, like say a 700 character string of numbers. And that is the key to get into these Russian secrets. Well, you can't sit there. I mean, you can. It would take forever to sit there and go, well, I wonder what the 700, you know, it's hard enough to break a lock to get into a locker at the gym or whatever. Don't do that. But, you know, if you sit there long enough and go, okay, I'm going to try every combination of numbers I can get into this combination lock. It's just much bigger because it's a much, much bigger combination. So, yeah, if you could just sit there and like try every single possible combination and I could go to like the computer does that while I sleep. Absolutely. Give me 100 of those.
It's like me when I was trying to break into the HBO password code my parents would put on when we were kids. Like,
I'll guess it. I'll fucking guess
every
it.
Every fucking time.
Oh, those are the days.
I could work for the NSA. I've cracked some codes before.
I think you could. Yeah, I mean, it's like that's part of it was not only, I think, doing the actual math of it, but figuring out sort of how each different what should be foreign adversary, but oftentimes was also our allies, information like how they encoded it as well. So you have to know your enemy or friend.
You keep your friends close, but your enemies closer, which is wild because, I mean, now, many decades later, perhaps it's more glaringly obvious, but why would we ever think that, oh, the government has the power to look into everyone's emails and texts and track their communications? Surely that's just for Russia.
Right.
They would never do that to their own citizens.
Right. And when you think about it, from 1957 up through the year 2000, you know, all throughout the 1990s, most of that period of time, the only people with giant computers or anything that could be hacked were foreign governments or corporations or big things. Like you, regular average Joe didn't have anything that they could snoop on, except for phone calls, wiretaps, things like that. But insofar as like financial records and stuff, they start using this on corporations to get financial records, but targeting individuals as they do, we all started getting a little sus to it when it's like, y'all are going through a lot of data, like you're amassing a lot of data, and yet we're still having terrorist attacks. Like in the early 90s, we had the bombing of the World Trade Center. In the late 90s, we have the East African embassy bombings. In 2000, you have the attack on the USS Cole out of Yemen. And it's like, so your job is to like
Oklahoma City bombing.
You have, yes, you have like all these eyes out. And yet all these horrible things are still happening.
Something, like, everything's still slipping through the cracks.
Yeah. The NSA's like, listen, man, we're trying to keep up. It's like, well, we have been giving you a lot of billions of dollars. So what's going on?
Also, maybe you're trying to keep up with too much and just narrow the focus to what you originally said this was intended for, because you're getting bogged down in all the minutiae, which makes sense. Like, you're overwhelmed. You don't know what to do with stuff. And then it does slip through the cracks.
No, you're 100% right. Because once in the late 90s, everyone starts getting emails. Then all of a sudden, the NSA is like, oh, we got to get that too. So then you're gathering that too. And it's like, well, now we have so much stuff. And you've done what with it?
It's almost like the internet was invented for the government to keep track of us.
Or the government was like, you should get everybody an account on there. Let them have email for free. Give it to them for free. And it's like, shouldn't we make them pay for it? No, let them have it.
Let everybody have one. Let everyone have one.
Joke's on you. Sometimes some of us have 13 of them and can't remember the password, so then you just make a new email.
Truly. By late December 2000, the NSA had amassed an enormous trove of ever-growing data, but lacked the power to sort and analyze it. Former NSA employee Thomas Drake told CBS News the agency had so much information, it was
choking on it.
Longtime NSA analyst and mathematician Bill Binney had an idea to help sort it all. He developed a computer code he called Thin Thread. Its purpose was to collect, process, and analyze the massive amount of data facing the NSA. He developed the program and pitched it to the agency in January of 2001. Binney faced resistance at first. Some superiors were concerned about the constitutionality of searching data without a warrant. Binney then revamped his code to include a firewall that flagged data but held it for review until a warrant was obtained.
And it's crazy that the NSA thought, well, gathering the data, we haven't looked at it, so we haven't violated the Constitution yet. We've just gathered it. So
it's the Schrodinger's data situation yes. right now.
We haven't looked at it.
We don't know what's in there. It could be anything. It could be nothing.
Right? And it's like, but so we really don't want to go digging through it. Well, then meanwhile, Congress is like, why do we give you a lot of money if you're not digging through it to stop terror? So you have this, I see where the push-pull is. And Bill Binney, this is a genius answer to be like, the robot will search it and hold it. And then when it says we're allowed to go, we'll go.
You flag it for certain words, certain phrases. The robot gets a hold of it, and then you need it.
Right.
Until people get wise to that.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
In early 2001, Binney was told by NSA higher-ups that Thin Thread, which had a paltry estimated cost of just $3 million, would not be the government's chosen solution to its data problem. Instead, NSA Chief Lieutenant General Michael Hayden favored his own idea. Codenamed Project Trailblazer, the estimated $1 billion project would utilize private contractors and take several years to develop. The budget was approved, and the NSA moved forward with Trailblazer.
What do they say? It's not government work if it doesn't cost 50 times the amount and take 10 times as long.
Right? It $3 million, and we're calling it paltry, of course, to anyone. $3 million is a huge amount of money. To the government, not so much. That's a fucking drop in the bucket, especially when you're comparing it to $1 billion.
And he's like, I'm ready to go now. Like, we can implement this today. I already work here. And the argument of what happened with Lieutenant General Michael Hayden is big projects make careers. And so being the one that, not the one that had a nice, quiet solution that sort of fixed things and no big deal, but having like the big, flashy trailblazer was more, apparently more his focus. And that's a choice that you make as a leader, and you have consequences to those choices.
Yeah, I think that's when, if you're trying to go for flashy, you just rebrand Thin Thread. Right. Maybe you rename it because the name does sound a little bit weak. I'll be honest. Trailblazer does hit harder, but you just rebrand it because you've already got it there. And then you just jazz it up. Mm-hmm. It's like when you replate a vegetable platter you buy at Albertsons and you replate it like a nice charcuterie and you take it to the dinner party and pretend like you did it.
The nice when it's my turn to cook, I take a factor meal and I put it on a plate and I'm like, look at this chef created deliciousness. And it's like, really? Was it? But you're right. It's something you just fancy it up and then nobody knows that you were. It's even fancier, it seems.
And it's just as good.
And it's so good.
Better.
Yes, it's the better choice. But instead of being like, well, I just want to be flashy and spend $1 billion, like we're on you, Michael Hayden.
On September 11th, 2001, terrorists hijacked airplanes, crashing them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and Shanksville, Pennsylvania, killing over 3,000 people in the deadliest terrorist attack on U.S. soil. It was later revealed that information pertinent to stopping the attacks was located within the mass of data gathered by the NSA. That information was not utilized to stop the attacks, as it lay dormant at the mercy of Project Trailblazer's slow timeline. When asked later whether his Thin Thread program would have stopped 9/11, Benny told CBS,
"Absolutely."
And his former colleague, Kirk Weeb, agreed.
Yeah, it's that's got to be a gut punch to you when you're like, I really thought that this could have done something, and literally bureaucracy, now 3,000 people are dead and I feel partially responsible for this.
Man, I just sound like I really hate the government, which isn't the total not truth, but I'm going to put on my little tinfoil hat and say maybe they knew. The information that could stop this was in Thin Thread, and, you know, maybe it worked too good.
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted to put things on pause for a while and slow up the timeline because it was advantageous for them.
But no, I think that's a salient point, given that he came up with the idea, or didn't come up with it, but pitched the idea in early 2001, is ready in the summer to implement it, and gets the note from the government of like, we're going in a different direction. Just hang out. Keep doing what you're doing. No big deal. And why? Why? If it's like, I'm ready to hit the ground running right now and I can probably save lives, why wouldn't you want to implement it?
That's the question. Still working under the fear and frustration at the failure to stop the terror attacks on 9/11, the NSA went into crisis management mode. The agency's lack of understanding of the data weakened its ability to combat the terror attacks, according to a former employee. Leadership at the agency became determined not to make the same mistake twice. In late October 2001, just weeks after the attack on 9/11, the U.S. government passed the Patriot Act into law. Designed to empower the government to prevent future terror attacks, the broad-reaching law actually allowed the feds to gather data on just about everybody. Section 215 of the Act allowed the bulk collection of telephone records by the NSA, as well as the bulk collection of internet activities of innocent Americans. After 9/11, the gloves were pretty much off for everybody. You know, Bush very much took the stance of, this is a war on terror. We do not negotiate. You know, we're winning this war. And at the time, I think even Americans were like, yeah, whatever. Do whatever you got to do. If you got to dig through Americans' information, you know, and find out like, oh, people were training here in Florida for this, and maybe we could have found that out. Like, everybody, I think, was on board at that time because of the you know, what the country was going through.
No, I think you're right. And it was that horrifying event and the understanding that, oh, but if only we could have searched more, we could have stopped it, became the rallying cry and became this thing that they would hold up and shake and rattle and go, look, let us have this right to search people or else you're all in danger, which I think is true on the one hand. But you're right. I think they then said, well, what we really need is business records. And we also need to be able to, you know, the evidentiary standard to obtain these, because on the back end of all this is like a huge legal framework, which we'll discuss later. But the Patriot Act lowered the standard required when the government was even asking for permission of like, hey, you know, we don't really have actionable evidence that this person did it, but we have a reasonable suspicion that perhaps they did. And, you know, all of a sudden the standard is lower and they can just gather everything on everybody kind of.
With the battle cry being, well, if we just could search more, my answer to that is you could and you had the tools to do it. And we still weren't safe.
Yeah.
So if you already had the tools to keep us safe and you weren't using them, why should we believe that, oh, here, we'll give you even more that you already had to do your job better? No, just do your job with what you had because you already had it.
Yeah.
The information was there.
Massive mismanagement. And Michael Hayden eventually did step down as the head of the NSA, I think, because of this kind of waste of money that did nothing. And especially looking in, it's always in hindsight, right? That you're like, Benny had exactly what you needed and you chose not to use it. And that's why I think he and other what I will call patriots themselves said, I can't take this. I'm telling people and I'm leaving.
Yeah. It becomes a huge burden, I imagine, to know all of that. And just every day you're like, living with the burden, like you said, of that, I also would have to get it off my chest. I'd be a whistleblower. I could work for the NSA, but then I would get banned from the NSA because at some point I would whistleblow, probably day two.
I'm sure I would end up in some like horrible accident, quote unquote, because your girl won't shut up.
Decorated Air Force and Navy veteran Thomas Drake had begun his new job at the NSA on the morning of the September 11th attacks. He worked as a top executive at the agency when he realized the NSA was listening in to domestic calls without a warrant. He became concerned that Americans' constitutional rights were being violated regularly by his agency. Top brass told him not to worry, telling him,
"It's all legal."
Concerned, Drake gathered evidence, ensuring he didn't take anything classified. In 2005, he leaked pertinent information to the Baltimore Sun newspaper, including tips that the NSA wasted $1.2 billion on the worthless Trailblazer program when the cheaper thin thread could have stopped 9/11. In 2007, Drake was charged under the Espionage Act for retaining information. Proceedings drug on for years. After a story on the TV news show 60 Minutes was released in May of 2011, the government dropped all charges except one. Drake pleaded guilty to a single misdemeanor count of exceeding authorized use of a computer and received 1 year probation and 240 hours of community service.
This was such a vital whistleblowing scenario because he revealed, and the USA Today published a story about it, the Baltimore Sun did as well, that essentially the NSA was intercepting phone calls and internet communications from AT&T. They have their own little code name for AT&T. They call it Lithium. So take that information and do with it what you will. But they basically had a partnership where your phone call gets routed from your phone to AT&T to a little room inside of AT&T that the NSA worked out where they make a copy of it, out of AT&T to the next person's provider through the little room that the NSA has at their provider, and then to the other person's phone. So really, you had like five people on a call between you and me. If I gave you a call, AT&T's on the call, say you have Verizon, the NSA's on the call, and Verizon's all on the call, and everybody's got a copy.
And this could happen. It didn't necessarily mean every call that was being placed was being listened to, but they had the ability to do it if they so desired.
And make copies of it. And one of the journalists that reviewed some of the data that was leaked said, you know, this was like phone calls of like a journalist calling their family. Like, hey, babe, just want to check in. How are the kids? But it was clearly that journalist was on some kind of watch list. Otherwise, why was their shit getting listened to? And how was it that easy? And for Thomas Drake, God, first of all, first day of work's the morning of 9/11.
Oh, man.
Good
that
God.
Is, oh, that's, yeah, you're being thrown to the wolves.
The guy on CBS was like, that was your first day? Like, you could tell. It was like, that's your first day of work. But truly, you're a patriot. I'm sure you're thinking, like, I'm going to work for this. We're going to stop this from ever happening again. Mm-hmm. Like, as I work here. And then you're like, oh, we're kind of the bad guys.
Yeah, seems. We're real culpable in all this.
Yeah, no, it's, when you find out, like, essentially, it's not a wiretap. It is like a country tap. Like, they could tap into anything whenever they wanted. I'm sure the FBI of the 1920s was like,
Damn. If only we had that back right? then.
As a result of the NSA's embarrassment in the wake of Trailblazer, it began wholesale spying on U.S. citizens. The program, called codename Stellar Wind, was revealed by a whistleblower to the New York Times in 2004. The government installed secret electronic monitoring rooms inside of major telecom companies. All customer data, including internet activity, phone conversations, financial transactions, and email messages, was gathered and scrutinized by Uncle Sam's relentless eyes.
And we see like one whistleblower and then they'll change up how they do it, but they're still doing it.
Yeah, it's like the Taco Bell menu. Yeah. Like, bitch, we know that this is the same thing. You just you mix put it the up. Ingredients different for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Also, there's nothing the NSA loves more than spying on its own citizens than mm-hmm. code names.
Oh, dude, they love
Everything's it. Everything's got to have a fucking code name and to be a fly on the wall when they're named, because I feel like a lot of people come to that meeting with something that they like stayed up all night and they're like, fucking Stellar Wind. This has got to be called Stellar Wind. It. It's so fucking badass, Stellar Wind, you know? And then you're like, well, actually, I was kind of thinking it just be called like Wonderful Wind. No, it has to be Stellar Wind, Steve. Okay.
I said what I said.
You get real bogged down in the minutia again of these code names, which it's like, I don't know. At some point, you got to have a code name for the code. Why do you have to remember so many code names? Why can't you call it what it is? Oh, because probably other countries are listening to us.
Yeah, right? It's true, though. There's an element of cloak and dagger that I think they just enjoy as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we'll get to the Snowden links, but one of the documents that was leaked had like a graphic they had made. Like one of the things was called Codename Skid Row, and they like drew like little buildings and like a little street, and like the font was like crazy and like looked like spray paint. And I was like, someone's in the graphics department, like, oh, we need a logo for Skid Row. I got you. A Stellar Wind logo. I got you. So yeah, you're right though. They call the big ass building in New York that's like meant to withstand a nuclear blast that like records phone calls in New York, they call it Titan Point.
Titan Point. After the whistleblower revealed the practice publicly in 2004, digital privacy watchdog groups sued the government and the telecom companies. In response, Congress passed a law in 2008 that gave telecom companies immunity for violating their customers' privacy. With that same law, the government gave itself permission to intercept, analyze, and store Americans' international telephone and email communications with nearly no limits. Well, that's one way to go about it.
Yeah, that's what sucks. Like the Electronic Frontier Foundation is the one that was the spearheader of this, helping like represent the whistleblower and suing on behalf of customers that had been impacted by this. And yeah, it's pretty frustrating when you're like in the middle of a lawsuit and then a law gets passed. It's like the lawsuit that you have, all of that was legal.
Yeah.
We decided because we just decided.
It reminds me of when they bailed out all the banks and the housing crisis. It's like, what's the point of rules if nobody's gonna follow them? And the only people that are held accountable to following them are the little minions, the American public. Like, no, none of the higher ups. It doesn't matter. So it's like, well, okay, we'll just throw our hands up, because at the end of the day, like, we're powerless when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for the this would be the Obama administration. I guess, no, this is the tail end of the Bush administration. Through the Obama administration, it expands partisan politics. Like, it covers it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're from. From essentially the 1950s on, the relationship between particularly AT&T and the letter agencies of the United States government has been a very cooperative one, to where at first it wasn't really like wholesale turning stuff over, and now sort of post 2005-ish it is. Like, it's just a copy goes to the NSA and they say, oh, well, you know, it's protected or it's redacted, it's not really your information. Okay, sure.
Then what's the point of giving it to them?
Yeah,
if it's all redacted and it's like scrambled, then it would be useless.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't buy that, because then why would you even hand that over?
Yeah. They're like, well, we don't look at it unless we like really need to, you know, we don't intentionally store, you know, or we don't intentionally look at domestic things. I'm like, well, not intentionally.
No.
But, yeah.
But also the argument of unless we need to is pretty vague, you know, like what do you, what, I mean, yes, like known terrorist attacks are being created. Sure. We want to know about that. Other stuff, I think people have a right to a privacy to, and it can be exploited.
Yeah, that's the argument. That this FISA Amendments Act is this 2008 law, and it introduced this concept of minimization. Like, for Americans, privacy is like as minimally as possible, or we're going to look at it. Well, like, that's a really loose definition,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. What does minimal mean to you, and what is it? Yeah. Like, once a week? Mm-hmm. Never, unless, like, a word comes up on the flagging system. Think about the amount of emails and texts that you've sent. Something I've said has got to have been flagged, not Certainly. Even knowing, just like on accident.
Well, remember when we were, I think we were doing something, we sent something on Venmo and we referenced the Havana yes. Syndrome episode and mm-hmm. it said like, we flagged this payment as like an illegal payment. And I'm like, well, shit, man, now that it looks like I'm trying to, and I wasn't, but you know what I mean?
We're what trying it, now, to pay Tommy.
Right.
And for it's editing.
Like, yes. I'm like, we paid our editor for editing this episode about mm-hmm. Havana. That's like being like, well, we think you might've murdered someone because it says like the murderer of John Doe or whatever. And it's like, well, you've misunderstood what that is. And so that you can see though, how easily when we have these quote unquote safeguards, innocent things can get swept up. And then you go, well, you've incidentally been collected. So we will minimally look at it. And it's like, these are terms that are loose, yeah. incidentally and minimal.
Also with that incident, Tommy had to talk to a real person.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bot. Like,
no.
So a real person looked at all of that. And also, like, the first time to flag it, and then we had to contact them, and then a real person talked to us through that. So, think of, there's 8 billion people mm-hmm. on the planet, however many are in the U.S., like, we're just, million. That was one incident, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times a day is shit like that happening?
Yeah, and the idea really is their goal is to collect information on people who are not U.S. citizens. So then all the people mm-hmm. that you interact with, you think, and now their shit's all getting, yeah, it's expansive, to say the least. Sinisterhood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
The government also installed data recording switches, or taps, on cable lines throughout the country. The law passed in 2008 was allegedly designed to allow the government to intercept foreign intel. But the taps installed to monitor information are scattered throughout the middle of the country, rather than on its own coast, leading some experts to believe they're meant to gather information domestically as well.
Which I didn't think about this. Now, satellites are a whole other thing, but there straight up are wires that go in the ocean that connect us yeah. to other places. And so you think, okay, well, I'm going to be where all those wires come into the U.S. That's where I'm going to be at if you're the government truly looking for foreign intel.
Right.
But they're like, but also Oklahoma, who knows mm-hmm. why, maybe. And you're like, well, what are you doing there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, foreign things happen perhaps there. So again, their
and
argument.
They're not wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, I mean, like to use Florida again, like. Hijackers that hijacked those planes had been training mm-hmm. in Florida. So, I mean, mm-hmm. and although that was on a coast, but, you know, I mean, things can happen anywhere. So I On one hand, I understand, but on the other hand, I'm very cynical, so mm-hmm. I assume that it's all being used for against us.
No, you're not wrong. And I think this is kind of equivalent to the Fourth Amendment border search exception, where that's an exception to having a warrant, is that a border, right? Like, you're coming into our country, we should be able to search you. Well, then when airplanes were invented, the jurisprudence had to go like, well, a border can be like in Boise, Idaho, because someone flew in from, you know, Mexico straight to Boise. Therefore, the second they touch down, yeah. that's actually the functional equivalent of the border. So I think perhaps as the technology has evolved, we all have to evolve the laws as well. And it's like our laws are always, I feel like, two steps behind, right? We mm-hmm. see this mass collection of data, so they passed this law in 2008 that actually doesn't really address what's about to start happening and only sort of addresses what was happening because technology just evolves so quickly.
Mm-hmm. The ACLU called the new law unconstitutional. Bill Binney, the creator of Thin Thread, told Wired that the NSA's operation was wholly focused on data collection, regardless of the constitutionality, saying,
"They violated the Constitution setting it up, but they didn't care. They were going to do it anyway, and they were going to crucify anyone who stood in the way. When they started violating the Constitution, I couldn't stay."
Binney and other NSA colleagues left the agency in protest. In 2012, the government was still focused on data gathering and began investing heavily in computational power to crack and analyze the data. A massive supercomputer center in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, was opened to house the project. Oak Ridge is the same place where uranium was enriched to create the bomb the United States dropped on Hiroshima. The computer developed there runs millions of mathematical equations per second in an effort to crack any data encryption, like a combination lock.
And that's the NSA said after 9/11, we need to attack this like the Manhattan Project, pretty much. Like, we need to put that much investment into it and make this our own thing. They started developing their own chips when it became clear that, like, U.S. chip manufacturers couldn't keep up and only Japan could. They're like, well, we don't want to use anybody else's chips, we want to use our own. So then they created their whole chip production facility. So the NSA is creating its own, pretty much, R&D department to develop the fastest computer in the world and the biggest storage area in the world. And, like, just because they can't trust another country to do that. Although we're the ones that be like, hey, we built you an embassy. And then you move in and you're like, there's wire, there's like bugs in the walls here. So I think because the US government's like, well, we would do some shit like that. Right? So we're not trying to, we're not, Japan's like, we were just trying to sell you microchips. They're like, what's in your microchips? Because we would have put some bugs in there. Mm-hmm. So they've started developing their own shit.
They know what's possible. So because they're doing it. So, you know, I mean, it makes sense that you would want to do it all yourselves, but are you as advanced as what every other country is already doing? Well, you know, it's always a race with another country.
It really is. And we were racing really hard with Russia and beating them. And Japan really started matching us in the late 80s. And now I think China, Japan, Russia, and us are all fighting to sort of be this, like, the best of the best of the computer on the front, on the cutting edge of computers. And truly, whoever it, we already have a quantum computer, but whoever can create the massive computing ability it takes to break through what's called AES encryption, which is like the most secure. They said it would take like all of humanity to, it would take the length of time that humanity has been on Earth to try to crack it or whatever.
Which is just, so you long. Can't even wrap your brain around that.
So long. But the idea is if you could create a quantum computer where everything moves even faster than we have it on the very, very fastest supercomputer, which we have in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, that you would essentially have the keys to the world. Like, no foreign adversary could have a secret from you. Nobody could. And if they already have that, they probably wouldn't tell anybody about it. You know what I mean?
No, no, no. You think the Oak Ridge boys have it?
Yeah, dude, they do. Sure. That's why they keep setting up shop there. The Oak Ridge boys are a secret. It's like why America's a superpower.
Where Bill Binney's Thin Thread project was meant to parse data solely that the government could use to save lives, the NSA today simply gathers everything. And Binney told Wired magazine in 2012,
they're storing everything they gather.
So just put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I was like, oh, he worked there. Oh, no. Right? He knows.
Yeah. No, like, I believe him. 100% I believe him. And I think there's a lot he probably isn't saying or doesn't even know that goes on there, too. To hang on to every bit of info that comes across the wires, the government has to have a big hard drive on which to store it all. Out in the Utah desert, Uncle Sam has built his own cloud, a dark web full of nearly every shred of American citizens' private data. Just 30 minutes south of Salt Lake City sits a building five times the size of the U.S. Capitol building. At 1 million square feet, the unassuming named Utah Data Center, codenamed Bumblehive, is where rack after rack of servers sit chock full of data for the NSA's supercomputers to analyze. Well, you know they gotta fucking call it Bumblehive.
You know, there's like, it's their Google Drive. They're gonna call, just search Bumblehive. See if
just
it's
go to Bumblehive. Yeah, this building is enormous. I mean, it is out in the middle of the desert. Mm-hmm. Because it's fucking huge. Where else are you going to find that much land to build this thing on? And it's costly.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not cheap. A couple billion dollars, $2 billion, I believe, was the total cost to it. What throws me off, so it has an official website because, you know, it's our government.
It does.
It looks like the website was made in 2011 when they created it and they haven't updated it. But there's a picture on there. And this is where I feel a little, it's like, Are you being funny? Are you fucking joking with me? You being cheeky?
Is it the winter picture?
No, it's the fucking picture of, it says Utah Data Center Administration Building. And then there's a picture and the metadata of the picture says Utah Data Welcome Sign. And there's a sign that says, welcome to the Utah Data Center. And it looks like a church sign. And you know where the sign on the church sign would be like, you know, a quote from the Bible or whatever. It says, If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear.
Okay.
And like, what?
Well, that sounds threatening.
Excuse me. Hey, it's Heather. Brief aside in this conversation, I feel like I need to clarify that after we got off the air, I realized the image I was referring to is from a parody website. So the joke still stands, but be aware. Sometimes parody websites are so good you think they're the real thing. Anyway, back to the show.
I thought you were going to comment on the picture they have that says, the Utah Data Center, it looking beautiful in this wintry mix, and it's like covered in snow. I'm like, why are you trying to like make this seem like some kind of resort that we should all be excited to go visit?
Yeah, how beautiful. Yeah, it says the Utah Data Center keeps watch 24 hours a day.
And it says, it does.
Hey, we are Americans first, last, and always. We treasure the U.S. Constitution, and we understand that a spirited debate is often necessarily a precursor to exceptions. That's why we're going to have a link here to send you to Twitter and just search the words NSA Utah on Twitter. And I'm like, no, it's not going to be a good thing. It's going
to
be
so you can go debate
jobs
on Twitter if you want to talk about this.
Yeah, but they posted up pictures of the whole place and everything. You can't get close to it. Of course, there's security and whatnot, but to get up to it, but you can see it from the highway. And
yeah, you see it from space, probably. It's fucking huge.
My favorite is when the Atlantic reporter went and goes, he's like, this is a secret facility. She goes, you can see it from the highway. And he goes, yeah, I know. And it was kind of like, we should have moved it back a little further.
Yeah, we got to make it a little bit smaller. I mean, where are you going to put that unless you surround it with trees?
Huge fence or something.
Yeah, people are going to see it. It's pretty big. In addition to the data center, the city of Bluffdale is also home to the Apostolic United Brethren, the polygamous offshoot of the Latter-day Saints, featured in the 2010 reality TV series Sister Wives. Well, so there's multiple nefarious things happening out in that desert, it seems like.
I was like, wait, that's the same city?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's the same city. It's, I guess that you got a lot of space out there, and if you're a offshoot of the Latter-day Saints and you need a little space, you go south of Salt Lake and you're the government. It's like, you got some land out here. There is a tie for the U.S. government and the University of Utah. It was one of the early spots where computer programming became like a major. Like, I had no idea until we were researching because I was like, why Utah? And apparently, in addition to Silicon Valley, a ton of things were invented there. I believe the early iteration of the company that would eventually become Pixar was developed there. So it's like that, where a lot of very smart computer people come out of Utah. So that was, I was like, oh, that's an interesting thing. And it was because there was this professor at the University of Utah who was just like, this is the next big thing. I swear you guys, we should have a whole department on it. And like, how absolutely edifying for that man that later on was like, I was right, just saying.
And there is a lot of space too. So, there you is know, true. You can't put something like this in Manhattan. Like, how are you going to house something like that? You got to have like a huge ass desert. Completed in August of 2014, the behemoth, plain-looking NSA building can be seen just off the highway behind a fence that's built to withstand an 18-wheeler barreling into it.
Which is probably a good security measure to have, given its proximity to the highway. That would be, you know, that's like accidentally or on purpose, a terrorist attack through via, it's not going to get attacked from the sky because there's a military base very close by. So any of that would be, you know, shot out of the air immediately. But a just undercover terrorist attack, you know, in an 18-wheeler or something like that, you wouldn't otherwise know. And it's just seemingly making a delivery and then takes a turn into the data center. It wouldn't, that's one other thing is like, maybe you would hit some of the servers, but I imagine like the important stuff's hidden like way towards the back. Like you're going to run down like the bathrooms, the front. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always, when I hear things like that, it makes me think, man, what other security measures did they have to come up with? Because a place like that, I mean, it's like Fort Knox. So things that I would never even think of, I'm sure, are implemented there. And one of them is an 18-wheeler barreling into it, which you do have to take into consideration. The massive data center is powered by the Cray XC30 supercomputer, codenamed Cascade, and is capable of computing more than 100 teraflops, or 100 trillion calculations, each second to assist with the demanding needs of the intelligence community, according to the data center's official website. Rest assured, though, that despite the incredibly invasive power the center holds, it has the public's best interest at heart, with the site further explaining.
The steady rise in available computer power and the development of novel computer platforms will enable us to easily turn the huge volume of incoming data into an asset to be exploited for the good of the nation.
Exploited? For the good of the nation. We it doesn't end there. That sentence, there's not a period. For the good of the nation, everybody.
Add something else after exploited. Exploited can't end on exploited.
No, you can't end on exploited.
Yeah, it's my understanding a flop is a single equation like 1 + 1 = 2. So to be able to do 100,000 trillion is so very many. I mean, this place holds, I believe the estimate is that it holds the equivalent of 250 billion DVDs. Like, that's the only way. Like, I was like, I can't even say so, boss. Yeah, I'm like,
I can't even wrap my head around what that would look like.
What even fits on a DVD? A movie?
I was just thinking of 250 billion DVD cases stacked up. Big. How tall that would go.
So big. All the way to the moon, probably.
Whistleblower Thomas Drake told CBS News that the NSA has in its possession
the entire world, effectively.
This includes intel on foreign adversaries as well as everyday people. He elaborated that everything from taped phone calls to intercepted emails and records of online purchases are stored by the NSA, all in an unassuming building in the Utah desert. After initial reports of the data center were published in Wired, a journalist with The Atlantic headed to the Utah site to investigate. While there, she and her companion, an attorney/professor, were detained. The agents told them that suspected sovereign citizens had visited the location, demanding to know what was going on in there.
And the article, it's linked in the show notes, from The Atlantic is really great. And the woman who wrote it is a fantastic writer. And it's just fascinating, like, what happens when you cross paths with sort of low-level government boots on the ground kind of guys who are like, we're just having a friendly chat. You can't leave and we need your IDs, but you're not being detained and this isn't an interrogation. She's like, can we go? And they're like, we're just having a friendly chat. And the attorney's like, so we can leave though. And he's like, just a friendly chat. And they just kept being like, we're just chatting. We're chatting. Don't move.
And they're like, but can you move out from in front of the door? Cause I'd like to go. Nope. They're like, still chatting.
We're just having a chat. You have to wait till my supervisor comes down. And it was that they had mistakenly, the journalist and the professor/attorney, which like what a convenient person to bring with you, had accidentally gone on like a road that said, do not enter, trespassing, whatever. So they weren't like super in trouble, especially. She was like, I'm a journalist. He was a professor in that area, just also happened to have previously been a lawyer, but knew his rights, thankfully. And so they had plausible deniability to get out of there. And the guy was just like, listen, we got to check because, you know, people have heard about this on the news and they're coming up here thinking like, we're going to get in there. And so that's the problem is you want as a citizen to know about this and the the damage that the U.S. government's doing with its citizens, as insofar as like, we can't trust you, right? You're taking our information. We're demanding answers. Well, some people demand answers with a shotgun at the door. And others are like, I'm going to go speak at a city council meeting. And one is much better, the city council meeting, than the other. So,
yeah, there's few things that's probably more of a beating to deal with than a sovereign citizen. Right. So if you get a bunch of those storming your compound, the next time you see a truck turn down the wrong street, you're like, here we go again. Yes. We got these idiots that think none of the fucking rules apply to them, that they're their own country. The data center came into the news in May 2013 when NSA contractor Edward Snowden worked with journalists to expose the agency's massive invasion of Americans' privacy. Snowden discovered that the NSA was collecting and storing vast amounts of data on both U.S. and global citizens, often without their knowledge or consent. He was most disturbed by the bulk storage of phone records, internet activity, emails, social media content, and other personal information gathered by the agency in violation of the Constitution. This massive amount of data was stored in the Utah data center.
Yeah, and that's what they, he came out and pretty much said, like, it's everybody that they've got shit on. Like, it's not just adversaries. It is Angela Merkel, like the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, a bunch of different countries, including our allies. It's not a great look. So they were not happy with Edward Snowden, but he has always been justice oriented and basically said, at the time when I found this out, I was like, he had worked in previous government job that was, he felt like he wasn't really helping and wasn't really doing anything. So then eventually when he got transferred here, he thought like, okay, maybe I can actually make a difference. And it's always those people who come into it with pure intentions and are shown like, hey, baby, welcome to the machine. And it's all just a big bullshit machine for a good reason. Again, they're trying to intercept terror attacks. But when you find out, it's like, but yeah, we have like a switch at AT&T. So we have a copy of everything.
Yeah. It's also wild to me that they would trust so many people knowing what they're doing when they know what they're doing is in violation of the Constitution. And they're just kind of assuming like, well, you work here now, so we assume that you're one of us and you're not going to say anything.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of, I think he was not necessarily supposed to be getting the documents that he got and was a very good and smart programmer and was able to essentially every job he got, he would just be like, he figured out how to automate it and didn't do his and like would just automate his job and then go and dig through shit. So I was like, well, thanks, man. But yeah, he basically found out like there's just a copy of everything and it's harvested into this program called X Key Score, which the agents at the agency could literally just like type in like email, chat, Skype call, passwords, browsing history.
Pictures. That's how you search it. That's what really gets me. Pictures, videos.
Audio.
Yeah, because I just think like, I mean, if you've got everything, then that means you've got the worst of everything too. And then you have a bunch of people that have at their disposal a bunch of shit that's illegal. But maybe they're into it.
Right. Well,
and then you got it at your fingertips to just watch and listen to whatever you want.
On it's like one of those things where you're like, well, they know what all you search, and it's like true. So like if you're a nefarious FBI agent searching through this for like nefarious purposes, you would be found out and fired. But like how soon?
By sharing leaked documents with journalists, Snowden sparked a global debate on privacy, government overreach, and the ethics of mass data collection. He was charged under the Espionage Act and remains in exile in Russia to this day. He's become an outspoken advocate on data privacy, authoring the memoir Permanent Record and inspiring the biographical thriller film Snowden, directed by Oliver Stone. After the initial disclosure by Snowden, then-President Barack Obama delivered remarks in June of 2013. He reassured the public, saying,
"When it comes to telephone calls, nobody's listening to your telephone calls."
Instead, he told us the government was just
sifting through the so-called metadata.
However, the metadata tells the government who you called, when you spoke, for how long, and who else you called after hanging up. This vast trove of data is stored in the Utah Data Center.
Which was their argument, right? It was like, we're not listening to the contents of your call, Christy. We were not listening to the contents
of
your call.
But you could if you wanted to.
But they said, but we can't without a warrant and we won't. all we're looking at is the metadata. And it's like, okay, well, we know you called. One of the examples the EFF used was like, if you know somebody gets a call from their doctor, and then after the call from their doctor makes a call to Planned Parenthood and talks for such amount, XYZ amount of time, you know what I mean? You can, in a state in where we're moving toward reproductive health being criminalized to where they'll know that you don't want that. You don't want anybody to have copies of that and of anything, right?
Which is scary and sad that we've gone so far back. Like that it's even to that point where we have to think of stuff like that. But it's true. I mean, when nothing is private, then how do you do anything without getting caught? But, and like their thing says, well, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. Well, my reproductive rights, in my opinion, are my own thing, and you don't have any say in it. So, but that's not the law in Texas.
Right. And that's, it becomes worrisome because the original law that governs this, the 1978 laws, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA Act, was passed in response to the U.S. federal government spying on civil rights organizers, Martin Luther King, and also later Vietnam War protesters. So it's all well and good if it's like, it's just for terrorism. It's just for terrorism. But when you have a presidential candidate who's like, I would love to utilize the Justice Department to get back at my enemies. The danger becomes the person who has access to all of this data and says, show me everybody who called me a fuckhead and I want them to be arrested. We can find a list of every person who made comments on the internet or texted or tweeted or whatever, or vice versa. Hey, we need to get these people that are any of these Gaza protesters. We got to shut them down. And you know how we find out who's called who? What group chats are they on together? Where are they? That's where it starts to get dangerous.
What online forums are there?
What forums are they in? What TikToks are they liking and sharing?
Exactly. Yeah.
So that becomes this danger of like, well, it's just the metadata that we're seeing of who you called and who you, and cell site data has become another big issue, which we talk about in our minisode of who are you with? Who are you associating with? In my opinion, that violates the First Amendment, which is a right to peaceable assembly. I should be able to assemble with who I want without the government interfering. But that's, we love you, Barack Obama, as much as you can love a president, right? Like no president's ever perfect. He did a ton of horrible things, but I think on the whole did a lot more beneficial things than he did horrible things. But it just goes to show nobody's ever perfect, right?
No.
We have a great president who did a lot of great things and you're like, yeah, but what the fuck, man? What are you signing? What are you signing this data privacy shit?
I mean, at the end of the day, they're all still politicians. So
right. Trying to protect us.
Yeah, it's a spectrum. And some or trying harder than others. But when you think about what happened on January 6th, and then you're like, so you're telling me that that same president that invoked that could just be like, you said, I want to find everybody that's ever criticized me ever, or something even more petty. He could do that.
Yes. Yes. With that, the search program, certainly. Yeah. Sinister Hood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that?
Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious.
New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
In January of 2014, President Obama signed a presidential policy directive, PPD 28, a document he said was an effort to protect the national security of the United States while respecting individual privacy and civil liberties. The Obama administration touted that the directive supposedly codified current practices and established new principles related to data collection. Years later, it was revealed that the directive was so broad that the NSA had continued many of the problematic data collection practices. The agency had also begun sharing raw, unredacted data with other agencies, like the FBI and the Drug Enforcement Agency.
Which then begs the question, if we as a society say, okay, we want the NSA to gather info, to protect us from foreign and domestic terrorists, then why does the DEA need this? Well, we're trying to catch drug dealers because the fentanyl is really bad. I agree, fentanyl is bad. But when you start to erode the Fourth Amendment to go, well, but this is also bad, and this thing is bad too, and this is dangerous, and this is an epidemic, and this is horrible, and suddenly everything's so scary that it goes, well, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear, mm-hmm. so we're just going to need to get everything. And I would disagree with that. So after this, the 2015 Freedom Act got passed, which was supposedly put a stop to the warrantless searches, but... So you have this Freedom Act passed right after this. It's like, listen, we're not going to warrantlessly search you anymore, but we can still use Section 702 of that 1978 law because that didn't get was not repealed by this 2015 law. And under that, it says that we can just gather all the stuff and that we can incidentally search through it if we want. So, I mean, it's not really searching. It's like there's just all these technicalities where it doesn't loopholes. Even make sense if you, yes, it's just they find another loophole and they mm-hmm. reauthorize their loopholes about every 2 years.
Yeah. And when it's so vague that, like you said, anything could now be problematic that they can put under this umbrella of like, mm-hmm. well, if it's a threat, well, you know, all of a sudden now, oh, she's trying to get an abortion. Well, that's a threat. It's like, that's well, the question. That's, you know, like where we, there has to be a line and, it doesn't seem like there is one.
Yeah, the line is Section 702 says the government can conduct surveillance inside of the United States by looking at any digital communication so long as the surveillance is directed at foreigners currently located outside of the United States. But when they suck up a bunch of digital data, they don't know what all they're going to gather. So again, you get that incidentally. Well, it was incidentally gathered, but it's okay for us to still search it because we have it. So it's cool. We didn't mean to gather it, but we did. And now that we have it, we're going to search it is what the law says they can do.
There's a lot of stuff here. Some of it might be to foreign agencies, but we're going to have to read through all of it. Oopsie, mm-hmm. look what we found here that has nothing to do with that, but we're still going to pursue it.
Yeah, the EFF said in 2021 alone, the FBI conducted over 3 million warrantless searches of that incidentally collected data on U.S. citizens. And it's like, they can still do it. Like they can type in an American's name, your email address, your phone number, any of that. And it pulls up any communications that have been incidentally gathered under Section 702. So.
And it makes me wonder what is in my server.
Yeah, we should at least get a copy of it.
I want to know what everybody else gets to see. I mean, I know what I've done, but do I?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It would, you know, if you've done something so egregious, you're going to know about it because they're going to come knocking at your yeah. door. But that doesn't mean that, like, a search hasn't been run, you know, yes. on you for some reason.
And the search can be run for not just they think that you might be a domestic terrorist. And the new authorization of Section 702 happened. The law was called RISA, R-I-S-A-A, and it was passed this year. Is like in May of this year, and it expanded the coverage, not from just terrorism. Like I said, drug sales, the DEA, they can search it. The FBI can search it. They can also use it to vet immigrants and people seeking asylum to see if there's. Mm. So now you're getting, again, it's what was initially meant to just for national security. Well, that's such a broad term that it sort of encompasses everything. But that law will be up for renewal in 2026. So it's something to look for of if anybody is petitioning the government to make these laws more narrow to where our privacy is at least like obfuscated somehow on their servers mm-hmm. until it's needed. I don't know.
Running a data center in the Utah desert is a hot and expensive endeavor to keep the servers from overheating. Water is cooled, then pumped through pipes near the servers to reduce the temperatures. Water works better because liquid is a superior convective agent to air. However, residents who live near the Utah Data Center in Bluffdale are suffering from water shortages and power outages as their server-filled neighbor guzzles 7 million gallons of water daily.
And you see this with the Bitcoin mining places that are happening out in West Texas, where you're like, we have so much space out in the desert. And you're like, very fast computers are very hot. The mm-hmm. desert is very hot. You're putting mm-hmm. them in big old metal boxes. What are you going to do with that?
Mm-mm.
You can't
7 million gallons of water daily mm-hmm. when there are, I mean, Flint, Michigan still doesn't have clean water. There are countries that don't have water mm-hmm. for, you know, I mean, it is just.
Arizona is running out of water.
It's a glaring spotlight on the gluttony that is the United States government.
You know? And they say, but it's, oh, we gotta have it. We gotta have this data. We gotta have it.
I think you could have had it for $3 million back when Thin Thread was being proposition to you.
Yeah, you sort of see how one bad mistake just sort of, they try to overcorrect and overcorrect and overcorrect until you're sucking down 7 million gallons of water a day.
Mm-hmm. No matter how secure our government promises the Utah facility is, stored data is still at risk. And when it's leaked, the results can be catastrophic. Recently, National Public Data, a company out of Coral Springs, Florida, that aggregates data for background checks, suffered a massive data breach, posting on their official website,
"There appears to have been a data security incident that may have involved some of your personal information. The incident is believed to have involved a third-party bad actor that was trying to hack into the data in late December 2023, with potential leaks of certain data in April and summer 2024.
First reported on by Bloomberg Law, the NPD breach includes an astonishing 2.9 billion records, including names, addresses, and social security numbers, some dating back three decades. As millions of Americans contact their banks to freeze accounts and take identity theft protection measures, the NPD assures the public they have
implemented additional security measures in efforts to prevent the recurrence of such a breach and to protect our systems.
What the fuck, man?
I mean, that's what you say. You'd be like, we have the most state-of-the-art encryption. Okay, a lot of banks have state-of-the-art locks, and people still Ocean's 11 their way into them. And that kind of becomes the thing of, okay, well, this is just a private company in Florida that has this information for background checks. It is so much more sensitive, all the shit we keep in Utah, and like, well, I guess we better hope that the encryption's real good on that, that we have the smartest supercomputer in the world, because that's the danger if your adversary has an even better computer that you don't know about, and they can hack in, and they know where your data center is, and that's the honeypot. Like, that's where we got to get to, and we don't necessarily even have to drive an 18-wheeler through the fence to get to it. That becomes a vulnerability.
Yeah. Cyber attacks, I think, will become the... I think we're going to see even more of them, though. I mean, even in the past, like, 2 years, I mean, every 6 months, there's a huge breach of something that seems to come out, and it's... Because it's when you don't have to employ military or, soldiers lose lives, it's all done anonymously. But at the end of the day, what's the most powerful thing you have? Information.
Absolutely.
So that's what everybody's trying to get from each other. In the class action lawsuit, it is alleged that the cyber criminal group USDOD is responsible for the attack and that they are attempting to sell the information on the dark web for a cool $3.5 million. To see if your personal information was part of the leak, visit npd.pentester.com. Experts also recommend freezing your credit report to prevent hackers from opening up lines of credit in your name.
And that's $3 million. Don't sell them all at once. You should sell them piecemeal, individually.
It's hard. I also thought that was kind of a low number, honestly.
They're probably just like, we don't have the infrastructure to sort through all this. So True. You just want it. We got it. You want it. That's where I think I told you the other day, I think that we'll see more like white hat hackers who are going to say, hey, we hacked into this credit bureau and we erased everybody's credit scores and you can't get it back, and because we think they're unjust, or we erased medical debt from this institution, or we erased this, and you know, whatever. I think we'll see more of that, because everything, we have become so reliant on the digital, the digital version of everything.
Truly. Yeah. And all the experts with this most recent leak say, I mean, as much of a beating as it is, like, you really should call your banks and freeze your credit reports. Even they said, like, shutting down stuff, it doesn't, like, you to really try and prevent someone from opening up something in your name, you have to go and freeze your credit reports.
Yeah. Which is, someone's like, I have to call three places. And that's me, because I got to call three places. I have yet to do that.
The government claims that their data collection systems are in place to protect the American people. However, many believe the real reason we are under the constant watchful eye of Big Brother is for more nefarious reasons. With a massive center that houses every internet search, phone call, text, credit card application, and more. It is clear that nothing a private citizen does is actually private, at least when it comes to the internet. In a world in which information is power, such delicate data becomes more precious than gold. Which begs the question of, how is any of this legal?
Well, that's a great question. And it's legal because the people that are doing it, that are gathering the data, are the ones that write the laws, right? We had, when it first came out in the late 70s, that the government was snooping around on protesters and civil rights activists, then there was a big outcry and you passed FISA. Then you have the Patriot Act post 9/11. Then you have the FISA Amendment Acts after the initial round of leaks from the Patriot Act came out. So like I said, you keep seeing the government catching up. And every time, while they overtly pass laws and say, we're going to pass this 2015 Freedom Act that says there will be no bulk collection of phone records by the NSA anymore. Well, then the NSA and the FBI just go, we still have 702 of the 1978 Act, so we're just going to keep using that. So just make sure that in all your reports, you write that this was incidentally gathered because of da-da-da. You know, they figure out reasons why. And it was this year, the Electronic Frontier Foundation just posted a call to action saying, be careful. And Wired Magazine did the initial reporting that there was an internal email of the head of the FBI got sent that sent out to all the agents when Section 702 was reauthorized just this year saying, hey, you should use this. Try to use it as much as you can, because that way we can show Congress that it's really useful. And in 2 years, when it comes back up to be re-upped again, we can prove to them like, hey, look at all these crimes we stopped. Look at all these people we searched. It's so great. Please let us keep doing it. And until I think the tech industry can help, and organizations like the Electronic Frontier Foundation can help shape policy suggestions, so the next time that this comes up for a bill on the floor, that it is inclusive of things that are sensitive to Americans' privacies. Until something like that happens, it's like, why can they do this? It's like, because they wrote the rules that says they're allowed to do it.
Yeah, it's the same thing of, you're like, why can't we just print more money? We're the one that made it. I mean, if you make the rules, then you have the benefit of being able to change those rules that you made, and you can kind of mold it to however you need to continue doing the same thing you've been doing for decades and having the same mistakes you've been having for decades as well.
Right. And it may be kind of a Y2K situation where, well, they stopped so many terrorist attacks, we don't even know about them, which is probably true. And that is what we want them to do. Absolutely. I think where we get queasy in our stomach is to say, you can do, hopefully you would be able to do that part of the job without also having all of this sensitive data. But the Supreme Court decision, and it was from the 1950s, and it's U.S. v. Reynolds, developed this thing called the state secrets privilege, which, if like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, when all the leaks came out in the early 2000s about, you know, the NSA has got copies of everything from AT&T, they're like, okay, we're going to sue on behalf of this whistleblower. We're going to be the legal force behind this. Well, the government can invoke this state secrets privilege when there is a reasonable danger that the disclosure of evidence will expose military matters. So in the interest of national security, that should not be divulged. So the head of a department which has control over the matter can just step in and say, oh yeah, all that discovery you're asking for, you can't have it. Sorry. And the Supreme Court has said, because we want to protect the state secrets of the United States, they're allowed to do that. And so you can hit a brick wall. And it's not just the United States. You know, Canada's got, I think it's still pending, it's like Bill C-26 that is not as egregious as the U.S. data laws, but it is loosely worded such that these watchdog groups are like, hey, Canada, you probably don't want to follow in our footsteps.
No.
Maybe.
Like, probably tighten, ever.
Right. Like, maybe tighten these rules up a little bit. You know, tighten the language of this law up before it gets passed. Because if not, you'll find yourself in a situation like us where we have a half a century greater, now 75 years of legal doctrine and jurisprudence that just says, we can. We can because we say we can.
Yeah. Yep.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time.
For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Millions of gallons of water go to cooling the massive hoard of data sitting on Uncle Sam's servers in the Utah desert. What happens to that data and how it is used for or against us are the key questions. Edward Snowden argued in his memoir,
"The freedom of a country can only be measured by its respect for the rights of its citizens. And it's my conviction that these rights are in fact limitations of state power that define exactly where and when a government may not infringe into that domain of personal or individual freedoms. Freedoms that during the American Revolution was called liberty, and during the Internet Revolution is called privacy."
So what do we think?
That's, I think he sums it up there because you can't have the Democratic Republic of the United States without respecting the Constitution. And one of the biggest hallmarks of the Constitution is not only the Fourth Amendment, which protects us from warrantless search and seizure, but also the First Amendment, which allows us to peaceably assemble and to speak out and do all those things. So what are we anymore if we say, well, our fear has allowed us to erode the things upon which our country was founded? And that's where I think is a very difficult balance to strike between privacy and national security intelligence. Like, I want the, like, don't get me wrong, I want the United States to have the fastest computers and the smartest machines, because I am a privileged American who gets to live in a country where I am safe from being attacked in my home, right? Like, we're not going to have a missile strike in Texas, because not only do we have the Texas
Hopefully
National Guard,
not.
The federal government, right? Like, they're watching it. They can't, you know, they're going to stop it. Nobody can come. Nobody can hit us, is what we think and what we hope is true. But on the flip, and if the question is, you say to Americans, you like that sense of safety? Great, great, great. You have to give up all your privacy. We get to know everything about you, and we can use it against you for whatever reason, now or forever in the future. You can't predict what it will be like in the future, what we'll use it for. But I don't know that I'll make that deal, right?
But also, you still aren't necessarily 100% safe.
There's that. But also, we can't really get everything. So then that's a good point. Like, you're telling me that the feature is that it's going to keep us all safe and perfect, but in fact, it's not. And also, I'm still giving up my privacy. And my whole concern with all of this is, it's all well and good. It's the same way I feel about presidents using executive orders to get things done. We don't live in a dictatorship. Sometimes executive orders are necessary because it's something within the executive branch's purview, and it just needs to get done without having the big mess of Congress. But the whole point of Congress is that we get to select our representatives. They represent our interests. They debate and discuss. We get these laws, and then we all together have decided. So it's all well and good if it's a president you like signing executive orders. You're like, oh, this is great. We're getting so much done. But the problem is, then that leaves a tool that can be used as a cudgel by the next person. And we've seen that happen. And I feel like it's the same with this data. It's like, we want to be, we trust our current government. They're great. Joe Biden is the one that signed the law that reauthorized the RISA law that reauthorized the use of Section 702. So again, not everybody's perfect.
Right.
He doesn't seem like the type that would go search on there and see if whoever called me an idiot or whoever says, "Let's go Brandon." I want to find everybody that's got a "Let's go Brandon" sticker and that they purchased it through this website. And I want a list of their fucking names, and I want to go send a person to their house and tell them to fucking watch out. Joe Biden's not going to do that. He's eating ice cream in Rehoboth with his family. You know what I mean? Like, The question then becomes is, whoever's in charge of us next, what do you think they're going to do with every bit of information about you? And who do you want to have that? Mm-hmm. Somebody laughing, eating a bag of Doritos, trying to get everybody healthcare? Or somebody who's like, I'm going to use this and I'm going to get them.
That just becomes a question.
Somebody's walking around with a little cup of fake jizz.
J.D. Vance jizz in a cup. Yeah, that's who should be in charge.
Is that who you want? Somebody that, or the person that, you know, supports and encourages that to have this type of information?
That's just a question.
I really believe that the most powerful thing anybody can have is information, because there's a certain amount of money that, like, okay, you have all the money. Like, what is a billionaire going to do with more money? Mm-hmm. But to have information on people, that's priceless. I mean, you blackmail, like, that's the personal things that make us that then can be used against you. And yeah, I think probably more than not, it's used for the purpose that it was intended for. But I think we would be remiss and naive to think that global citizens and U.S. citizens' privacy are violated way more than we think.
Truly. And that's what there's the Brennan Center for Justice, the woman who's the co-director of that, Elizabeth Goyton, I believe I'm saying her name right. But she pointed out, kind of, listen, probably they're doing this for national security and it's targeting foreigners. However, you cannot detach yourself from the fact that it is deeply embedded in our domestic communications infrastructure. Full stop. Like, there is a building called, they call it Titan Point in the NSA documents, but like the Long Lines building in Manhattan is a big ass windowless building, and it has a bajillion miles of cable running up in it. And there are three, and AT&T runs it. And there are three floors in there that are sort of unaccounted for, that it's kind of assumed that's where the NSA operates out of. And they've got a countrywide tap. Like, we jokingly say I have like my Uncle Heather persona, where it's like, you know, I'm like Dale Gribble, right? Like, you don't know, but I'm not making it up. Like, this is all just fun facts we've recently learned from this. So I think she makes a good point of like, yes, they have a plausible deniability that like, this is just for us, for foreigners, but you can't necessarily limit it neatly to non-Americans if it is just the fact that they got a tap on AT&T in general.
Yeah. No.
And who's running it, really? Like, we think we elect our president and we think our president's in charge. Well, ask JFK, like, who's really in charge? Yeah. Oftentimes it is these letter agencies that have a lot more pull than
shadow
we know.
Shadow government. Mm-hmm. And that's where my concern comes in, is if you do get people in office that want to use U.S. citizens' private information to help further their cause, which, I mean, if you look at Project 2025 and what that looks like, and then you think, man, the people that support that also know everything about me.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. Yeah. Yeah. Good. And they also know all the people that support that stuff.
Yes, I'm saying they
can target them too. So in a world where like everyone's worried that it's becoming even more divided and, you know, a civil war could happen and stuff, like, knowing each other's private information and where you stand on things and the secrets that you share with your friends and family, even if you're like, surely nobody cares that I'm calling my mom right now. Probably not. Probably nobody's listening to that. But they could.
Yeah.
And who's to say that they won't, you know?
That becomes the concern, right? People whose very existence, trans people, non-binary people. So it's like, oh, they know you called this hormone doctor, and then they know that you accessed this website that's a support group for whatever. And when you have stated policy positions are like, we've got to eradicate these people, then that does become, it is an existential threat to people I love, which means it's an existential threat to me, right?
Sure.
So, and that's what makes, I think, paying attention to this stuff extremely exhausting, but I think very important to the extent that we have the capacity. You know, I may have a greater capacity because my actual safety is not at risk. So I'm trying to pay attention to as much as I can and tell as many people I can about this. So it's, the question's always like, what do I have the capacity to do in my 3-foot zone, my 3-foot radius? That's what all I have control over. And like, it's just being aware of this, paying attention, and, you know, understanding no politician's ever perfect, but there will be, November 5th is the election date, a new person will be in charge of this big ass data center cloud. And the question is, who do you want to be in charge of it? The person who said, I will use this to punish my enemies, I cannot wait to use the Department of Justice to punish my enemies, or another person who's like, hey, like, here's like 53 policy things I want to do that don't involve eradicating anyone, That's just, like I said, it's a question for us all to answer when we're alone in that voting booth.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely get out and vote. And I would be on the right side of history. I hope that everyone is, or herstory,
as it and, was. And I think, too, keeping your finger on the pulse, a place like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the ACLU, Wired Magazine does great reporting on this. If you're like, why haven't I heard about that? Just check out, follow them on social media or just read articles from Wired every once in a while. It's fucking eye opening.
It is.
How do I not know this?
It's scary. And right? I think that's why it's overwhelming. And even I, like researching for this, I even told you, I was like, I'm so overwhelmed with information that it really does, it becomes like fatigue for a lot of people, myself included. So you kind of just like, you're like, all right, I know, but I can't like deal with this anymore. And I think that the people in charge of stuff like that kind of count on that. They want the American public to be fatigued so they don't ask questions.
A whole other episode we can do on Project Mockingbird and how the CIA controls the data and information that we get.
Right? Yeah. And think about, we live in a country where we have a lot of privilege in the information we get. There are some countries that, like, their government, you're getting one website that tells you all the shit that that they want you to know. Mm-hmm. And depending on who's in office with this kind of information, like, maybe it's 10, maybe it's 20, maybe it's not in our lifetime, but, like, are we going to trend toward that type of same country?
Do you want a government leader who said in policy promises and speeches, you know, when I'm in charge, the news won't say mean things about me anymore. I'll make sure they're shut down. I'll be in charge.
You don't have to vote again.
Yes. I'll get rid of the FCC. Yeah. Things like that. You're right. I think that, like I said, if we're not premised on literally the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, where we have independence and privacy, no matter how, you know, I think there's some really cynical people that's like, none of us have any real constitutional rights. Well, okay, that's fine. But some is better than none. Like, they keep getting eroded, but like, if we could stop the erosion. Oh, yeah,
there are many people around the world that
fatalistic.
Have it much, much worse. Definitely. It's just, it's a good reminder to be grateful for what we do have in the United States, but also keep your finger on the pulse, because it used to be like the American dream and everyone wanted to move here for the American dream. What's that anymore?
Yeah, now everybody's trying to bounce.
No, for sure. Everyone's trying to leave now because we're worried our rights are being violated. So just, they want you to be fatigued because they don't want you to ask questions. So it's up to us to stay informed and then do whatever you can, specifically vote.
I really like that poem where she says, you know, it's got good bones. Like, when you tell your kids about America, you can't be like, this is a shithole. You have to be kind of like a real estate agent that's taking somebody through a house that needs some work. And you're like, it's got great bones. Listen, yes, there are holes in the wall. For sure, the foundation is going crazy. But we can fix it. We can fix it. It's got great bones. And that's what I feel like. It's got great bones. But definitely a word to other people in a free nation, like I said, like Canada, where these laws are starting to come up to be like, don't be like us. Do better for yourselves. I'm so sorry.
Learn from our mistakes.
Right.
Well, what a time to really, I'm not even being sarcastic. Like, this is a time in our history, I think, where things are massively shifting and have the momentum to massively shift in a positive direction. And we just got to keep riding that blue wave all the way to November and really start to turn the tides for not only us, but for like all the generations that are going to come after us, you know, ones that aren't even here yet. Let's make this place better than it's ever been.
We'll fix it up. It's got good bones.
We got to fix it up. Well, if you like our free episode, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 900 hours of segments like Dear Sinister, Heather Saves, True Crime Headlines. all a bunch of Reddit stuff. We got all sorts of fun thing, unpopular opinions. We just did one on that was super fun.
Cheesy. It was literally, we talked about cheese. And we also, yeah, our Dear Sinister, our recent Dear Sinister was a laugh.
Great.
A minute. Mm-hmm. We also have free trials where you can join for a week, check out the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. So you can hop on and listen to that. You can also listen to our most recent mini-sode where we discuss a recently convicted serial killer out of Alaska. We've got some more mini-sodes coming up for you all as well in the next few weeks. And you can check out our monthly live stream replays, quarterly bonus content replays, ad-free episodes, monthly mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
And for recent patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show. Make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And be sure to use your Patreon merch discount, which you can find in the pinned post on Patreon.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. We make it very easy to do that. Follow us on socials and check out the episode description for sources used during our research. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and links to all those live show tickets for the Full Moon Energy Tour.
You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. You can watch full video versions of our Wednesday episodes on YouTube. They drop ad-free on Patreon. And you can also check out clips from the show on TikTok. And if you want to order your own personalized video shout-out from us, head over to cameo.com and you can have us give you a delightfully strange, is what the Cameo AI described us as. And like...
Not wrong. You were dancing in a corn skull costume in my backyard the other night. Yes. They're not wrong.
So go to cameo.com and let us know what you want us to do for dance in a corn skull costume, horse head lady body. We have a number of Petal can make an appearance, or the corn skull, anything like that. Let us know.
Check with Petal.
Yeah.
I'll see if she can pencil.
She's available. cameo.com/sinisterhood. Christy, where are you at online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy and Wallace, and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World, and on the NSA servers at HotButt29. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
HotButt29. I like that there were 28 other hot butts before you.
I tried them all, the combinations.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Angie Nickerson,
Kristen Birschbach,
Nancy Lingo,
Rebecca C,
Katrina Mascarella,
Simone_EG,
A Guinness, Please,
Katie Upchurch,
Stephanie Isaacson,
Monique Renee,
Liz,
Catherine Jennings,
Ellen Sykes,
Maria Ioder,
Anna C. Kapainen,
Caitlin Delaney,
and Leanne Adkins.
Thank you so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We hope we pronounced all your names correctly. We sincerely love every single one of you. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Wah-ha-ha-ha.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.